Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi. Mesechas Erechan Daf Chaf Gimel. We begin at the Mishnah right on top of the Amud with a fellow who was Magdish. So he gave away all his assets. Hamagdish Nechasov. The thing is, it's all beautiful and noble, but he had some outstanding debt on his account. Voice Olav Ksubas Isha. So he owed the Ksuba payment to the wife, and upon her divorce, she's entitled to make that claim. Not only that, she has a lien, she has a shibut on all his assets for the sake of collection of her ksuba. So now if he's Magdish Nechasov, he gives it all away, technically those assets, those properties are really bound to the woman's debt. She has the first, you know, the first right, first access to that property in case he doesn't pay up his ksuba. In which case, the Hegdish never takes off. You know, there's a halacha, ein adam magdish. A person cannot give away something which doesn't belong to him. So, likewise, in a sense, all this doesn't really fully belong to him. They're bound, they're leaned to the ksuba of the Isha. So, although he gave it away to Hegdish, if it comes to be, she can just come around and collect it from Hegdish. It belongs to her first. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar Omer, if this fellow wants to divorce, kishiyigarshena, we have to set up a safety measure. Maybe really, this whole thing is a ruse, a ploy. Because he knows that his divorcee will collect from this Hegdish property. So what he's doing is, he's regretting his donation. So he's going to divorce. Pretend, right? Make a divorce, a temporary divorce. Have her collect a ksuba. He doesn't have what to pay from, so she'll run to the Hegdish, take away the, you know, repossess the property, and then he'll remarry her. He'll have his money back. And therefore, he says, when he's about to divorce, Yidur Hano. He has to declare a vow, he has to make a nether, that he will never have any benefit from this woman, and this way we know. We ensure that there's no game playing. This way he can't remarry her, he can't take back the money, so we know it's sincere. Rabbi Shoyim in Tzorach, there's no need to make this nether, we're not concerned about this setup. And the reason for this will be discussed in the Gemara. And just like we have this concern by Hegdish, Kayetzev Devar Amrshim Gamliel, likewise in a similar context, Rabban Shimon Gamliel tells us, Af ha'arev lo isha. If a person is an arev, a guarantor, standing at the wedding and they're signing the ksuba, they're looking for a guarantor to back up, to guarantee the husband's commitment to the wife. So they sign him on as an arev. Ha'arev lo isha uksevasa, v'yibala magashan. Same story. Now he's holding my divorce. Maybe not really a sincere divorce. He's divorcing in order to set him up. He divorces. She comes to collect. He has no money. They'll go expropriate the Arab's property. Fact is, he backed up the loan, the commitment, the ksuba. So likewise, he has to go ahead and make a nether. Yad yirena hano. The fellow has to make a nether towards this woman that he's divorcing. Similar to what we said before, a nether that he will not have anah from her. This way, it guarantees that he will not take her back and unrightfully, collect from this arev. Shema yasa kinunya, perhaps he's setting up a kinunya, a setup, an arev, Rashi says. He's strategizing against, he's plotting against the arev. Al nechazim shazan, this fellow's properties. The whole thing is just an arrangement to get this fellow to pay. They'll remarry his wife, who's in possession of the other's properties, and they'll have all this property. Okay, so we have two cases in the Mishnah where we're concerned that a fellow divorcing is perhaps just doing it in order to gain benefit, to get something out of the Hegdish or out of the Arev. So in the case of the Hegdish, Rav Elazar says, we have a safety feature. Make a nether. that he no longer having a no from her this way, we know that he's not, you know, playing games. Rabbi Shimon says there's no need. What's the machlekes about? What's this disagreement based on? Mike Mifliki. So perhaps it's as follows. Blazo Savar. Adam Oise Kinun Yala Hekdesh. We're concerned that a person would actually play games with Hekdesh. Rabbi Shimon Savar, no. You know, a person would not, you know, do that to Hekdesh. Ain't Adam Oise Kinun Yala Hekdesh. A person would not dare do that on Hekdesh. To, you know, set up Hekdesh to get something out of the Hekdesh unrightfully. Says the Gemara, is that the case? That according to Blazer, we suspect that a person is playing games with Hekdesh? Well, the Hodam Rav Huna. What about Rav Huna's halach? Shechiv Mar, a fellow is deathly ill. Shehekdesh Kol Nechasav, he donates all his assets to the Hekdesh. And then, a minute later, he says, oh, but 1 second, Va'amar, Manad L'Ploini B'yadi, I have some money, some of my money really belongs to, you know, I owe somebody $100. Ploini has a mana in my hands. No one would believe him. So rather than suspect that he's just, you know, turning around and regretting, you know, it was Hekdesh and he's backtracking, we trust him that in fact a part of his money was really, you know, obligated, was really Meshubad, because Chazaka, it's an established understanding that in other Moisek Kinuni al Hekdesh, a person would not seek to disenfranchise Hekdesh. And if he's saying it, he means that it's real. So really this statement seems to be subject to machlekes, which machlekes is now Mishnah. Rabbi Lezer says we are concerned that a person will try to disenfranchise Hekdesh. Should we assume that Rav Huna's statement is really subject to machlekes Tanaim? No, you don't have to say that. I can't let pligel be bari. Perhaps the machlekes in the Mishnah is only by a healthy person. Where Rabbi Lezer is concerned that perhaps he's seeking his own benefit. So he's setting it up in that manner. Aval b'shchimar, but a fellow was deathly ill, about to leave this world. He has nothing in it. There's nothing in it for him. Divrei HaKol, all would agree, ein adam, we don't suspect that a person would play games and try to, you know, the shortcut, you know, the Hekdesh. Ein adam oisek nun el Hekdesh. My time, you know why? And that's a concept that applies all the time, all over. Yetzer only entices a person if there's some sort of perceived fantastical benefit, something in it for me, but I wouldn't sin for somebody else. Because if I have no benefit, I'm not blinded by my desires. I can see it as it is, objectively. For me, I don't see it. I'm all blinded, but the other person, oh, I see it exactly, black and white. It's clearly wrong, right? Any of them, a person would never sin with their law if it's not for himself. He could, I mean, there's another approach to this discussion. So if we're speaking about a healthy person, all would agree, even Rabbi Yeshua would agree, the Adam Oisek, this is the Adam Oisek Nunel Hekdesh, a person is suspected of shortchanging Hekdesh. So why in fact does Rabbi Yeshua not seem to be very concerned about this fellow's divorcing after he was being Magdish? Perhaps he's trying to get back some money. The question is, okay, so we're concerned. We suspect. So what do? We get him to make a vow. A neder, to keep away from this Isha. This way we know that he's not going to have any benefit. Now, I mean, yeah, he can make a neder, but then he can go to the Bezdin and undo the neder. Get three people, sit down, make a Taras and Dar. So what's going to ensure that the neder holds? It's a neder who should have a rabbi. It was a neder that was exclaimed in public. It's a public declaration. The question is, can that be undone? That's the point of machlekes. Mar sabay yesh lahafara. Rabbi Shua says, what's the point of making this nether? Even a nether of a rabbin could be undone. So if he's playing games, he could just undo the nether. You haven't really gained anything. Umar sabay yesh lahafara. Blazer says, no, once you do a publicly exclaimed nether, you can no longer undo it. So there's a point and purpose in imposing that nether on him, which will bind him to his word. Everybody, same another way to understand. Kuli alma, everybody perhaps agrees that nether should be rabbin yesh lahafara. Another that was uttered in public, just because it's a public setting, it's still your private nether. You can undo it with, you know, with a bezin. But rather, we're speaking over here that we're imposing a nether of a different sort, a nether al das rab, which is going to be expressed according to the understanding, according to the mindset of the Rabbi. Which means to say, once you say it, it's sort of in our domain. You can't just turn around, undo it, and regret it. It's not in your hands to tinker with. That's Reb Lezer's approach, and therefore we have a very easy solution. This fellow who's suspected of playing games imposed a very severe nether al das rabim upon him, which will set him on the right course, divorce permanently. Whereas Rabbi Shua says, you know what, even a nether al das rabim could be undone, so it's really pointless. So what about our Meimar statement? A nether that was done in public, that could be undone. According to the mindset of the rabbim, he's bound to them and their mindset. And for he can't turn around and undo it. So perhaps what a Meimar is teaching is really subject to Machlekes Tanoim. Should we say that what he's teaching us is really subject to Machlekes Tanoim? This is another issue we have with this understanding in the Mishnah, that it's just a matter of practicalities. We're saying that all really would suspect this fellow of wrongdoing, but Rabbi Shua says there's no point in making the nether because it can undo it. So Rabbi Shua says there's no need to make a nether. It certainly is a need, but you're not accomplishing anything. And it's should have said there's no point, it's not effective. So the wording of Rabbi Shua indicate that his concern is something else, that he's on a different perspective. So what then is the Machlekes about? Again, a fellow who is maglish all his assets, and there's a ksubas isha outstanding, he divorces. Lezer says, one second, before you divorce, a nether to ensure that he's not taking her back and disenfranchising the hektish. Rabbi Shua says, no need. What's the Machlekes about? The question is, can a person, once he pledges, once he donates the Hekdesh, can he undo it like any other nether that you can just go and say, I regret, I didn't realize? Or perhaps Hekdesh is different. It's a commitment that cannot be retracted. So that seems to be the Machlekes. Rabbi Shua says, look, a fellow who was Magdish's Nechasim, if he wishes to undo it, very simple way, just go to a couple of people, sit down, and make Hataras and Dar. He doesn't have to resort to all this playing games. He doesn't have to make a kenunia, divorce his wife. Much more simple, easy solution. Make Hataras and Dar. So if he's divorcing, we're not concerned that perhaps it's just a setup. If his motive is to get back his property, he has a much simpler way to do it. Ha, she'ela, Hataras and Dar. Rav Lezer says no. Once you have maglish, it's out of your hands, you can't undo it. You're committed permanently. So, yeah, if this fellow is having regrets, he can't really undo it easily. The only way is to go divorce and set it up that way. So that's why we set it up in a way that he can't. We make a nether, which removes that option. In fact, we have a machlekes tanoim on this. Beis Shammai hold that you cannot retract hekdesh, and that's going to be like Rebbe Lezer. Whereas Beis Hillel say you can retract the hekdesh like any other nether, and that's like Rabbi Shua, exactly as we explained. Vatani of a brisa, a magdish nechasa, a person gives away his assets to the hekdesh. Voisel of ksubas isha, on which there was this ksubas isha claim. Rav Lezer Omer, so he had a claim on he had a debt to the isha. Rav Lezer Omer kshumagashi darno, if he's holding by divorce, first make a nether to ensure that you're not doing this to collect from Hegdash. Rabbi Shua Omer, in itself, there's no need. Rabbi Lazar comes to Rabbi Lazar and explains exactly as we had lined it up, that this machlekes links to machlekes B'Shamim B'Silol, whether or not you can retract Hegdash. From Rabbi Shimon, hey, Nain. These two opinions are perfectly lined up with B'Shamim B'Silol. Hey, Nain, Divir B'Shamai. So Rabbi Lazar is like B'Shamai, you can't retract. You could retract. Even if a person claims it was a mistake, too late. It's out of your hands. It's discussed in the Sechas Nazir, why and how. If it was a mistaken misunderstanding, you can redo it. Likewise, he would apply the same concern, the same formula to a person who's divorcing when there's an arev, when there's a cosigner, a, you know, guarantor on the ksuba for concern that perhaps you're doing it to cut him short. Now comes a story about Moshe. His name was Moshe Bar Atzri, who was in fact the father of Rav Huna, great scholar, mentioned many times in the Gemara. And the father was an Arva. He was the co-signer, the guarantor, the Arev, the Kalsiyav of his daughter-in-law on his son's ksuba. Rav Huna Bray, Surabim Rabban Hava, son of Rav Huna, was a young Talmud Chacham, a great man. Utchiglu Milsa. As happens very often, Talmud Chacham is busy learning, he's not making much money, so he had a hard time paying his bills. Amar Bai Sabai expressed himself like this. He says, what a pity, nobody is going to advise him how to get some money. Apparently his father can afford it. Leka Denaspi Eitz, there's nobody to advise. Let's give advice to Rav Huna to do as follows. Ligarish, the Ligarish Ledvisu, let him temporarily divorce his wife. Vitispa Ksuvasu, she'll claim to Ksuva payout, which Rav Huna can't pay out. And she'll have to go to his father, Mavua, who's the guarantor of Lahadra Mahadra. Then Rav Huna will remarry her and will have some money for the next couple of months. In a minute, the Gemara is going to ask, how could a person advise to, you know, cause somebody else, you know, to pay out? We'll see that in a minute. Amalei Rava. So firstly, Rava asks, before you get to first base, we have a Mishnah, which preempts it. We have a system which prevents this. Vanatnam, we have a Mishnah, Yidur Hanotnam. We force them to make a nether, not to take her back. So what are you going to gain by divorcing? Vabayi, he will respond, yeah, that's when he's in the Bezdin, who's knowledgeable. Utter, you think, called the Megarish, anybody should divorce this, Bevedin and Megarish will divorce in the Bezdin. Those days, you know, you can, people just know how to do it on their own. So it'll be Megarish in a manner where he won't make a nether. Nobody will enforce the nether. So why don't you do that? Turns out that it wasn't going to work. So turns out that it was discovered the Kohen Haver of Huna was a Kohen. So the solution won't work for him. He can't remarry a divorcee. Amar Abaye, to which Abaye says, Basar Anya, after the poor man, poverty follows. Azla's anyusa, poverty follows. So the person is meant to be poor, just you can't beat the system. Okay? So he didn't have money to pay his bills, and he couldn't tap into this strategy either. Ask the Gemara, why would Abaye advise him to do this to begin with? Is that so that Abaye would advise, you know, Rav Huna to, you know, strategize against his father to get money from him? Umi Amar Abaye Hochev, Amar Abaye, Abaye himself teaches us elsewhere. Ezeh Rasha Arim. I'll give an example of a sly, wicked person. You go ahead and you advise people on matters which you have no gain. Go do this and this, get money out of that person, something which, what are you doing? What are you getting involved? What are you sticking your nose into somebody else's business, causing somebody a loss? So an example of Rasha Arim, Zehamesi Eitz, a person who advises, he offers advice to a person as follows. So this halacha relates to a fellow who, you know, gave away the building to Reuven. He says, you know, after you finished, after you pass away, it goes to Shimon. During your lifetime, it's yours, but afterwards I want it to go to Shimon. Comes another fellow and says, listen, Mr. Right? So Reuven, who was the first recipient, why leave it over for Shimon? What a pity. Go sell it. You should know, as long as you have it, it's fully yours. When you're no longer around, it goes to Shimon. Acharecha l'plani, but when you're around, it's yours, fully yours. Go sell, enjoy it. Take the money, give it to your kids. The person who gave him advice is called a Rasha Arim. It looks like he's trying to help people, but he's really disenfranchised, has an agenda. Disenfranchising the other. That's not right. So here as well, why are we advising him to how to extract money from his father? Says the one here, it's different on account of two reasons. First of all, it's his son, and he's also Talmud Chacham. Bray, his son Shani, is different. It's Rabban Shani. Talmud Chacham is different. It's chos to support Talmud Chacham, and isn't, you know, his assets are going to end up by his son anyway. May as well give it while he's alive. You know, the Velt says people should, parents try to give their kids, give their, you know, whatever they could to their kids while their hand is still warm, while they're alive. Don't wait until afterwards, right? Give it away now. It's a happy heart, right? So that's why Abaye allowed himself to, so to speak, to advise. He felt it was okay. It was his father would be okay allowing himself this this cost. Says the Gemara, one second, but in any case, the father was what? He was an Arev. He was a guarantor. Halacha is that a fellow who's guaranteeing a ksuba, it doesn't really formally commit him. It's just more like a formality at the wedding, you know, the guarantor, right? Because after all, I have to think of it this way. He's just there to facilitate the marriage, which is a mitzvah. And furthermore, nobody's spending money. I mean, unlike a typical Arev on a debt, on a loan, somebody actually laying out money on your say-so. Right? So, you know, the Ramban explains, really, every Arev is an element of asmachta, like you're sort of relying, you're hoping, it's sort of an exaggerated, it's not such a sincere, 100% sincere commitment, because you're hoping the guy would pay, right? So why is it considered binding? Because after all, you're having some prestige from it, you're having some benefit. Look, you're relying on me. He's lending him $1 million, on my say-so, on my word. He feels good about it. So in exchange, he commits himself completely. But not so by a marriage. Nobody's spending money. The Isha, who's getting this this right, this claim, hasn't really laid out money on it. So really, the Gemara later will explain these things. So really, it's not a valid commitment. It's not really binding. But typically, so in either way, why is the father bound to this payout? The Arev de Ksuba lo mishtabi, the Arev of a Ksuba is not committed at all. Says the Gemara on the Amud Beis, Kaplan Hava. He wasn't a regular Arev, he was a Kaplan. Rashi explains, he was physically involved, transferring the assets. So typically a kaplan of a loan is where Reuven, the lender, instead of giving directly to Levi, the borrower, he gives the money to Shimon, the Arev, who takes it from Reuven. He's like borrowing it, and he hands it to Levi. He becomes personally involved. More than just an outsider signing off. He's actually physically involved. He's like the borrower. He's first personally committed to the payback of the loan. So likewise, over here, there's a similar situation where the husband had given his wife some belongings as a sort of a security for the Iksuva payout, so it's now sort of bound to her, sort of owned by her. She has her, you know, claim on these. And then she gave it to her father. His father became like a borrower of these items, and then made its way back. So he became physically involved, and now he's the address to go to collect for the Iksuva. If, you know, says the Gemara, Kam Iksuva Hab, Kablan Hab. Okay, Hanichal Mandom, that's true according to the opinion, the Kablan, that even by a Kablan who's so intricately involved, he's not always committed. Afagav the less lin nechasim leib mishtabit, according to the opinion that even in a case where the borrower, if at the time of the loan, did not have real assets to back up the loan, still the Kablan is committed because you're so involved. You're a player in the game. So likewise over here, the father, since he was deemed a kaplan, he's fully committed to the ksuba, despite the fact that his son had no assets to back it up at the time of the marriage. According to the opinion which said that even by a kaplan, it's still a relatively limited commitment. He's only committing if he knows that at the time the borrower or the husband, in the case of the ksuba, has something to say for himself. He has some assets. So he's sort of hoping, that will serve as the, source of payout. Mandama islay, when the fellow has some assets, mishtabit, so the kaplan is mishtabit as well, just in case, it doesn't work out. But lesley, if he knows good and well, the fellow himself has no money, has no assets, right? No karka. Loy mishtabit, he's not going to commit himself. So Michael and Mamas, so back to the question, the father didn't commit himself for Rav Huna, didn't have anything at the time of the marriage. But he's saying we have two ways to explain. Either way, either Rav Huna Havali, he really had assets. Vishtad, if they got swamped, they got ruined later on. So as long as during the marriage, the moment of Nisun, he had something, so the father committed himself. But he's saying another way to understand, once again, we're pulling out the father-son card. A father, vis-a-vis his son, is fully committed to the cause. Shibud Mishapet Nafsh. Ditmar. Okay. Now let's go back to the general discussion. Which Arev is committed, which one is not? So if the two strikes against it, Arev, first of all, it's a lower level commitment, it's just an Arev as opposed to a Kablan, which is a higher commitment, just an Arev. And number two, the Ksuba, regarding the Ksuba, which we explained already, is not really a standard debt, so it's a mitzvah, and he's trying to facilitate the marriage. So here we have two strikes, Arev, and it's just a Ksuba, the Ve'akol HaMishtabit, all agree, it's not a real commitment, he's not really bound to the, he's not obligated to the debt. What about if you have two pluses? Number one is a kablon. Number two, it's a real loan. The balchoy money was spent on your say so. The Ve'akol HaMishtabit all agree is fully accountable for the defaulted loan. What if it's one on one? One up and one down. positive, what's a negative element? He's just an Arev, but it's the Baal Chayiv. So it's negative and positive. Or a Kabbalah, which is positive, higher level, but it's just the Ksuba. Pligi Bev Machlekes. To what extent he's Meshubat? Iklamando, one Peshitta says, is Leinichsid Leiva Meshtab? In this case, you know what? If the Leiva has money at the time, he has, you know, assets, so this semi, you know, Arev is really committed to the deal. Because, look, he's banking on the assets. Lastly, but if the borrower doesn't have any assets at the time, let me stop it, so he's not really committed. Another sheet that says, no, Avakav less than Mishtabit, even if the fellow has no assets at the time, fact is, he is a valid Arev. The conclusion is, Bekul, in all these cases, Avakav less than Mishtabit, even if the borrower has no assets at the time of the loan, the Arev is Mishtabit, Lavar, except when there are two strikes. Lavar mi Arev de Ksuba, when it's just an Arev and it's for a Ksuba, in this case, the Avakav the is Leila Mishtabit, even if the husband has assets at the time of the marriage, this fellow is not really Mishtabit. The reason is, my time, you know why? Number one, mitzvah kavod, he's just facilitating a marriage, that's his interest. And secondly, she's not really losing, she's not really paying out, so he doesn't really feel committed. How about the story about a fellow? So, unlike the case of the Mishnah, where he was magdish as nechasim, and then the isha is coming to claim her ksuba payout, or a fellow who, you know, there's an arev on the scene. Here we're talking about a fellow who sold an asset. Because Garshal Dviso, now he's divorcing his wife, who will have first claim on that asset. Are we concerned about a setup? Perhaps they're just plotting against the buyer. He's divorcing, she'll collect, he'll retake her. Shulchan Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef sent this question, Braid the Rabbah, the son of Rabbah, come here, Papa. Look, the Mishnah we have arev tonight. We have a discussion regarding an arev. We want to preempt any sort of dishonesty against the Arev. Hegdishtan, likewise, we set up a system to preempt any sort of dishonesty on Hegdish. We have the, you know, the nether that we do. What about Lekeachma? What about to protect the buyer? Do we make a nether that he can't retake her? Are we concerned? Amrili says, of course. Tana, you know, the Tana, the Mishnah, who just mentioned those two, you think he's going to mention every single conceivable case? He taught us the concept, and we'll apply it everywhere, yeah. Kiruchla, like a peddler is walking around selling his wares, Nichshav and Nezel go enumerate all different cases. Of course, it applies likewise by Elikeach. See, before he divorces, we impose a nether on him, lest he take her back. Now, Doi Amri, no, they disagree. Look, the Tanan, the items in the Mishnah are said, Leitan, Leitan, the ones that were omitted, were specifically omitted. You know why? I'll explain it to you. Amar Misharshia, my time with the Nadari. What's the reason for Nadoi not being concerned about disenfranchising this buyer? The answer is, he knew good and well before he bought what he's getting himself into. He took the chance. I understand that we preempt any, you know, game playing by Hegdish because of Hegdish's gain. We don't want to make Hegdish lose. Arev nami mitzvah da'avad. By the Arev as well, we're concerned about his well-being. The fact is, he participated in a mitzvah, alive midi chasre, and, you know, chasra, she didn't lose anything. It's like we said before. So he's there to help, and we try to protect it. Lekeach, but a regular buyer buys an asset, knowing that a fellow is married and there is a ksuba, potential ksuba payout on the horizon. Michti, look, meide yada. He knows good and well, the chol chad v'chad, every individual is married. He collects ksuba, there's a ksuba resting upon him. Amai nezel v'nizbon, why is he going by? Yehudahu das nafshei, he brought upon himself his loss, he took a chance. We don't have to go ahead and, you know, regulate this, you know, this arena. Okay, so we had a case in the Mishnah where a fellow was magdish. We were concerned that perhaps he's going to divorce and collect from the hegdish and take her back. Leza says we make a neder. Rishur says, you know, there's no point because, as we explained in the Gemara, if he wants to take his assets back, all he needs to do is make hafaras nadar. So he wouldn't have to do this whole elaborate ruse, so there's no need to get involved. We spoke about a similar case of an arev who guarantees the ksuba. So once again, before he divorces, make sure that it's not just a setup on this fellow's assets. We discussed different aspects of Arev. And the last piece was whether or not we're concerned about a buyer being disenfranchised. Says the Mishnah, Magdish Nechasav. Oh, back to our case, a person gave away all his assets to the Hegdish. And in fact, he had the outstanding debts. Vayisalav Isha, yeah, the woman is going to collect Uksu, Bachayiv, and or a lender. And technically, they are the first, they have the first claim on these assets. He'd never right to, you know, give them away. They're really bound to the payout of the debt. So technically, min haTorah, they could just walk into Hekdesh and take it away. But it doesn't look right. To the outside viewer, it looks like they're just taking away Hekdesh without redeeming it. So we obligate them to sort of execute a token payout, some like a dollar, just to look like you're redeeming it. Not Torah, you can be paid even $1 million property with $1. I mean, the Rabban has to be value for value. But here we just compel them to do a token redemption for, you know, appearance sake. The woman can't just expropriate the asset to pay out the ksuba, nor the lender on account of his debt. Rather, a person has to come in, make a sort of a formal pidyon with the intent of allocating the property for payout to the isha for a ksuba and the bachayv for his chayv. Now, let's say higdish tishim mona v'yichayv me'emona. Let's say the debt exceeded the value of the higdish. He was magdish an asset worth $90, and the chayv was $100. So, I mean, how are we going to get money in here? I mean, we're already short. So we have no choice. Moisev oydinar. The lender will have to lend him another dollar, upaydes anachasim, to redeem the properties. Ha'elom naslit nlisha ksuvasim. B'chayv eschayv. We'll have to make some sort of redemption, and ultimately direct it to the isha for payout, and likewise to b'chayv. We'll have to lose another dollar in the meantime. Lomuli l'meim apayda payda. The obvious question is, why do we have to have a fellow being paid at all? The fact is, as Rashi says, "Ein odem magdish dover she'ena shelo." A person cannot give away something which doesn't belong to him. These are, you know, committed to these debts. That comes first. Mishum neravo, on account of Rabbi Avo, emaravo. Shleiyem wrong people misunderstanding what's going on. They want all people saying, "Hegdesh yoytiv lepidi." Look, something can leave Hegdesh proper without being redeemed, and that's why a token redemption, you know, process is required. Now, the Mishnah in its concluding case speaks about a case where the debt amount exceeds the asset amount. And still, we say it's technically bound to the debtor, and a token redemption is enough. Masnis now Mishnah, which considers it Mishubet bound to the Isha or to the Bachayiv, even though the asset value is less than the debt amount. Deloy Kiram Shimamlil. It's unlike this sheet, the Sanyu. Rabbi Shimli Leimer. Im hoye khoybe kenag de gdeish poide, vim la vein poide. If the debt amount corresponds to the asset amount that was given to Hegdesh, indicating that he lent him the money with this asset in mind as a security, as a guarantee, so now he has a right to expropriate it. Technically, it's his without pidyon. We do a token pidyon, you know, a dollar, just to address the v'mlavi nipoide. But otherwise, if the value of the asset is less than the debt amount, apparently that's not what he was backing up on. Why would he lend him $1 million knowing that his asset is only $50? So apparently he's just lending it to him, you know, on good faith. So now he has no right to expropriate that asset. V'rabbona not come. Rabbona disagreed. They said no. Fact is, you know, he's backing on this asset, even though it doesn't really reach the full amount of the debt. So whatever he can get from the asset, he'll get. That was his mindset. Up until what point? How much more can the debt exceed the asset and still be considered an asset that was banked on, that he was relying on when he lent him the money? Ad kam, at palg, up until 50%, meaning, if the asset's worth $10, if it's worth any less than 50% of the debt, it's too little to be considered a true security. Apparently, that's not what he was thinking about. It's not what he was relying on. He just lent it to him out of good faith, in which case he has no right to expropriate this property in this manner. Okay, we'll pick up on the Mishnah tomorrow, Reza Hashem. All the best to you. I'm Sirus Tevis, always.